George. I am sure I ran over into my time, which is actually good news because I have relocation, and I'm not sure if I could speak on relocation for 45 minutes. I put together a supplemental handout, so I wasn't able to get my homework in on time. It's a little heavy. A part of that, I included some documents I got from the BCA on their RAP forms. I thought it was good in case, one, you haven't seen one, two, it has a very good summary in there that we could go over, and three, we have, is a copy of the statutes and might be a good resource for you. I'm sure most of you have the statutes and the administrative code, but it'll be a good resource for you. On the back, I have two unreported decisions. They're not groundbreaking or new. However, I think factually it's going to fit into my talk in terms of on a relocation case that's on a larger side and more complicated, what you really need to do during the process to be able to present your case at the end of the day in order to, on behalf of the property owner, maximize the recovery of the relocation. And it goes through factually what was done in that case, especially the Marathon case. That was, I think, a great case on the property owner's side, and it illustrates how to properly prepare a case. The outline gives you the source of the law. I wasn't sure who was also going to be here today, whether or not we would have novices, experts. I think most of you here practice, so I'll go over the benefits very quickly, and then we can get into some of the cases. The source of the law is set out on the first page. I do note that when we had this copy, they did admit as an exhibit the regulations that apply to the DOT takings. I will mention those today. They are separate then from the non-DOT cases. The RAP that's attached, Exhibit C is a summary page. It's a nice chart that outlines the benefits, but those benefits, when you look at the reference, it's for non-DOT cases. Anytime there's a taking, the taking authority is going to have to file a RAP that gets filed with the DCA, Department of Community Affairs. I have, as Exhibit 1, the forms. This is not actually the RAP is a workable relocation assistance plan, and it's designed to be the plan for the condemning authority and how they're going to provide the assistance. These are the forms that the DCA gives out. It is not a completed RAP, but I think it's it's a very good source. Exhibit A actually gives examples of some of the assistance that's supposed to be provided. Some of these are examples. They are not actual requirements. Some of them I find a little amusing. In fact, I've never seen them in any of the cases that I've been involved with. For example, assistance finding comparably placement housing, you will get that in a lot of cases. Going further down the list on Exhibit A, inspection of replacement housing to assure that it meets displacee's needs and complies with the applicable housing codes. I haven't experienced any assistance and inspections, but these are the types of assistance that you can request from the relocation authority. Exhibit B is some forms, instructions and forms. I think the from the condemning authority, they're pretty straightforward. You basically have to come up with a plan of what you're going to do. But I would like to jump over to Exhibit C and just quickly go through some of the benefits. It's broken down by tenants, homeowners, and businesses. First, in terms of making your request for non-DOT cases within 12 months of your permanent settlement, and the non-DOT is 18 months after displacement. So you do, from the very beginning, have to make a request for your relocation benefits after the agency acts. We'll talk about in a minute the appeal process. The moving expenses are pretty straightforward. You have to, if you go out, get your three estimates, submit them to the taking authority. I have not had a lot of experience of litigating moving expenses. Generally, I found most of the taking authorities, if you go out and get the actual estimates, unless you want to do it yourself, make sure that you still get those three estimates and let the relocation authority know you will be doing it yourself. It's better off to get the approval up front. They have rental assistance. The rental assistance, I think, is probably, along with residential housing replacement, having residential cases become a little more expensive for the condemning authority as the market is being pushed up. You can have below market residential leases that are long term, but when people go to move in an area that's coming around, they are going to have to pay either more for their new properties, either in terms of a purchase or rental, and there is rental assistance. It is capped at $4,000 for the DOT. I think it's $5,250 for the rental assistance. The next page is license, a fee for a licensed real estate agent. The next one is the down payment assistance. This one is good. Again, there's a it's up to $4,000 for the down payment assistance. However, once you exceed $2,000, the displaced person must start matching dollar for dollar. So there is a requirement for the down payment assistant for the tenant to contribute towards the payment. The next section is on for homeowners moving and down payment. There's not much of a difference there. You do have the housing replacement where there is a significant difference between the DOT and non-DOT. In the non-DOT, you're capped at $15,000, and I do think this is one of the things that is driving up the cost from condemning authorities to relocate people. We've had a number of cases in the inner cities where, with a lot of the redevelopment that's going on, as you move somebody, they may get X dollars, $30,000 for their homes, and they try to move to another neighborhood, and it's $60,000, $70,000. If the comparable housing has increased, but your market's a little bit behind, you do have the ability to get some replacement housing payments. It's $15,000 for non-DOT, and for DOT, it's a maximum of $22,500. Going on to the businesses, you get actual reasonable moving costs. You also have the ability to get the actual reasonable loss of tangible personal property. We do have a case that we'll discuss, one of the cases that's attached to here. It does get into the issue of what you need to do to get the to get paid for the loss of tangible personal property. One of the things to remember here is if you're going to request that you be compensated for that, you must elect to leave it behind, and it is an issue that comes up in one of the cases we'll talk about in a minute. There's additional expenses you can get reimbursed for searching, as well as professional fees that are itemized. You also have the payment in lieu of moving and related expenses. For non-DOT cases, it's not less than $2,500 or more than $10,000. For DOT cases, it's between $1,000 and $20,000. There's a test you have to go through that's set forth in the administrative code for the DOT. The site is 16-6-2.4, and again, the column does have the site for the non-DOT cases. That's a quick overview that I think from basically looking at the attendee list, I believe most of you have dealt with these issues. I did attach two cases, unreported decisions, that I thought were very good as sort of models to go through. And it's very important to discuss at the very beginning of the case as you're planning. If it's a redevelopment case and the client's fortunate enough to come to you early, you're gonna attack from the property owner's point of view very early on, the way Jeff Bonacore described it, starting at the planning board. The end of the case is going to be, you've either settled or jury verdict on compensation, you've relocated, and you've received your compensation, both in the form of fair market value and relocation. In between, there's a lot of planning that needs to go on, including the relocation. It's just more than moving. And if your client has found a replacement facility and needs to do modifications, some of those modifications are going to be an improvement if they're going to upgrade the facility. Other parts of that are going to be a direct result of property that's going to be moved over. It's very important that as you go through this process, your client meets with his general contractor, his architect, all the different people involved, and be prepared to segregate out the different components of the work that's being done. You cannot at the end of the case say, here's an invoice for $75,000 of electrical work, please pay me because I had to move. That's going to be denied, and you're probably going to lose as you go through the appeal process if your only evidence is an invoice and proof that you paid it. You do have to match that up with a specific type of work, and in terms of expenses, what is related to certain property that was being moved and hooked up, and what might be for new equipment that you went out and purchased as you expanded your facility. The first case is a New Brunswick case, Sanzar. In that particular case, there's a lot going on in the case, but a Kentucky Fried Chicken business, the property was taken, they decided to go across the street to a new facility, and in that case there's some discussion of representations that may or may not have been made by the condemning authority of whether or not that second facility was or was not going to be taken. It ultimately was taken, and that's an issue that I'm not going to discuss right now, or actually at all. In terms of the relocation, the case is good. It talks about what items are actually allowable and what proofs you need to recover those items. Going through the main items, there was a when the owner of the business walked through with the condemning authority, he designated certain items that he was going to have moved. There was a counter that he was going to move, an air conditioning unit from the top of the building, a drop ceiling, a walk-in cooler, and a hood system. These are items that the displaced person, business, said, I'm going to move with me, submitted a moving cost, I'm going to move these across the street, I'm going to need storage for a while as I retrofit my new place. And in my new place, I'm going to have to put in a new window. There's a tenant there. I want to buy out that tenant, buy him out of his lease so I can move my facility over there. And when you look at the case, they break down into it's 20 different categories what the displaced person was seeking. Some of those relate to the estoppel argument of, you told me it wasn't going to happen, I'd spent all this money, I want my legal and whatnot back. When you go through and look at the proofs that were presented, the person ended up not moving the air conditioning unit or the drop ceiling. One of the problems the person had is they never elected not to move it. So when they came back and requested compensation, the decision was, well, you never elected not to move it. They also went into a discussion of whether or not it was actual personal property or whether it was real property. The court went into, and there's a pretty good discussion of the functional unit rule, of whether or not, and I think most of the people know, the courts for condemnation cases do not use the manner in which the personal property is attached. That does show up in other areas, a lot of secured creditor type cases. It's whether it's a functional unit of the facility. In this particular case, there was no proof before the court of what the property was worth with the property and without the property. Therefore, the court denied it on both grounds. One is there's no proof of whether it's a functional unit to determine whether it's personal to your real property. And second, you never made the affirmative election to move it. And the displaced tenant was not entitled to receive that compensation. Again, the person was going to move a walk-in cooler, a hood, apparently during the process that was never moved, and it was cut up by the condemning authority. And the property owner said, listen, you guys destroyed it. I want to be paid for it. Again, the court said, you never elected to leave it behind. You were supposed to move it. It's not allowable under the relocation statute. You may have an independent cause of action. You may be able to directly sue the contractor, possibly go after under a separate theory, but you cannot sue and recover or present proofs to recover under the relocation law. For the electrical and plumbing, the court denied it because it was only estimates. They didn't have proof that they actually paid it. I think in a case like that, what's important to take from a case like that is when you're early on in the case, if you know you're moving, you have to think about what the statute requires and whether you're going to elect to move stuff, whether or not you're going to argue it's a functional unit, whether or not you're going to move it, and sit down and look at the big picture with your client from both a compensation point of view and a practical point of view, which is how you can operate when you move. The next case that's attached is the Jersey City versus Marathon. The facts are a little too complicated to get into, but in that case, it was a little over $5 million for the value of the property and over $2 million in relocation. That was a large hot dog facility. And in that particular case, I think the property owner knew they were going to have a battle. They had moved from Jersey City out to the Bronx where they had another facility. And what made this so expensive is the USDA requirements. In this particular case, you have hot dogs, you have summer cooked meat, there's raw meat, you have to separate the meat, the facility had to be washed down every 4 hours with 180 degree waters, there was requirements for the sloping of the floors and drainage. And the new facility, once purchased and constructed, was about $11 million. Clearly, as they built this new facility, there was going to be a lot of upgrades. However, with the strict requirements of the USDA, there was a lot of retrofitting that had to be done to the facility to accommodate what was being relocated over there. And in this particular case, I don't know the specifics and haven't spoken to the attorneys, but when you look at the proofs that were submitted, they knew this was coming, and as they went through the process, they segregated out certain invoices. So if they were going to have an electrical contractor in there that was doing, for example, $300,000 worth of work, they broke out the separate invoices to match it up to the equipment that was coming over, and at the time of when they presented their case, they had four or five different witnesses, a witness that would testify that this was actually necessary under the USDA regulations, that you had a retrofit basically there was requirements of how the floor had to be leveled, certain type of tile, where the drainage had to be, and a lot of this had to do to accommodate the equipment that was coming over. And in terms of the proofs, they were successful in tying into all the specific work tied into the equipment that was being moved over, and they broke out work that was done for new equipment that was coming over. So when you read that case and you go through, you actually learn how hot dogs are made and, you know, how they're concerned about no unidentified products going into the hot dogs. But in any event, it was a very expensive case. Had it not been prepared properly, I think a lot of the expenses that could have been recovered would have been lost, but for the proofs and having the proper witnesses. They had an architect, an appraiser, they had the CFO who was able to testify what was actually paid. They had an in-house person that had a lot of experience with the USDA to actually prove that this was required, which goes to whether it was necessary and reasonable. They had the person that actually paid it, and they were able to distinguish what was for new equipment that was purchased because it was adjacent to their other facilities. So there was going to be certain things in common, certain new equipment that they were going to get as they upgraded. But because they properly presented their proof, they were able to get a large recovery and a fair recovery. That's basically my overview for the relocation. Not a very exciting topic. Luckily, I was able to catch us up as we go into our break. Does anybody have any questions on the relocation benefits?